Welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and creative entrepreneur, bringing you interviews, inspiration, and information on writing, publishing options, and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free author blueprint, and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 439 of the podcast. And it's Friday, 5th of July, 2019, as I record this on a hot, hot day in Bath. And I am in my audio new studio, which I'm going to do a blog post about soon because it really is awesome. But it is just a box covered in blankets, so it's pretty hot in here. So in today's episode, I talk to Andre Chaperon about attraction marketing and tips for creative business. Now, Andre is well known, and he's a bit of a rock star actually in the internet business circles, for his fantastic email marketing course. And we do talk about that a little bit, but mostly I think you'll find Andre's tips useful because he is a super introvert and has designed his business to suit his way of interacting with the world, delivering huge value through writing and also being hyper-targeted and hyper-focused, as well as using his attraction marketing. We talk about that because, of course, that's how I do my business. It's pretty much all attraction marketing rather than paid ads or push. And he has built a very successful creative business that way. So that is coming up. In publishing and book marketing news, this is more a comment about rights, because thanks to Christine, who sent me a piece about Taylor Swift this week and her royalties. So this article has appeared, this sort of comment about Taylor Swift has appeared in a number of different newspapers. And this is, I'll link to a CNN article in the show notes. But essentially, Swift is losing the rights to her first six albums, thanks to a deal where essentially she recorded her first six albums with Big Machine Label Group. That company has been acquired by Ithaca. And it says in a Tumblr post, she wrote, "For years, I asked and pleaded for a chance to own my own work." Now, the reason I bring this up, and the article goes on to explain, musicians sign record deals with labels, allowing the record company rights to their recordings. The artist receives a cash advance to record an album and can receive royalties after it's released, but deals often come with strings attached. Artists can be prohibited from releasing music with other labels, and the labels own full rights to the master recordings, which are the key asset. And this is this key asset area. This is one of the biggest things that I think authors still struggle with. It took me a few years to get to grips with intellectual property rights. And I hope between this show, the Alliance of Independent Authors, Dean Wesley Smith, Christine Catherine Rush, all of us talk a lot about intellectual property rights. But this, you know, we often think music's different to publishing, but it's really not that different. It's exactly the same for traditional published authors. And many authors now can't get their rights back because publishers have realized that they can release the backlist, for example, in ebook and print on demand, or they've held on to audio, or, you know, there's lots of issues with intellectual property rights. But there was, I wanted to contrast this to an article in the Financial Times, which I read and is a very business-focused paper. It's called How to Make It on Your Own in the Music Business, and it gives an example of British rapper AJ Tracy, who stayed independent and has had best-selling records, is making really good money, and just got a shout-out from Stormzy at Glastonbury, which is a British music festival, the biggest one. So presumably more success to come. But he says, and the quote from the FT says, "I like the rewards I get from being independent, and the satisfaction for myself is a lot greater than being on a label. I'm a businessman as well. I have a family to feed, and I would like to capitalize and make as much money as I can while doing what I love. The grime artist now lives in a luxury flat by the River Thames, was named as one of Forbes 30 Under 30 for European entertainment in 2018. And unlike those with a record deal, only has one person with whom he splits the profits of his music, his mother, which I just think is lovely. So presumably his mum invested early. The million benefits of being independent, according to Tracy, include being his own boss, making decisions on every aspect of his music releases, and handpicking his team. But it's not easy, he says. You have to work 10 times harder to achieve things that people with labels can achieve. Funding-wise, I have to pay for everything out of my own pocket. So it says, although conditions are increasingly favourable, independent artists have to be determined and take initiative. But in a world of social media, the traditional role of a record label, marketing, is no longer relevant. So I wanted to bring up those two very different articles. Now, you have most likely heard of Taylor Swift, whoever you are, whether you've listened to her music or not. She's super famous. You probably haven't heard of grime rapper AJ Tracy. I hadn't heard of him either. But this is the truth, I think, of being an independent creative. It doesn't matter if people haven't heard of you. Now, on the one hand, my ego hates that. My creative ego still would love to be Dan Brown or Stephen King or whatever. Because, yeah, of course, I would love a movie deal and I'd love to be on the front of all the bookstores and I'd love to go on TV and talk about my books. But that's on the one hand, that little ego part of me, the little kid who just wants their book to be everywhere. Yeah, of course I want that. But on the other hand, the chance of that is a lightning strike anyway. Most books that do end up in that position disappear, like most hit songs. You know, you probably have a handful of favourite songs that you listen to over and over again, and then maybe you listen to some new music. Same with books. You know, we have our favourite authors and then we try other people. Most authors, I mean, it's funny because often I'll say to people, oh, I'm an author, and they'll say, oh, have I heard of you? I'm like, well, no, you haven't heard of 99.999% of authors either. So, you know, it's almost like they feel I should be a household name just because I'm an author. And I feel the same way about these articles. Taylor Swift is one of the very few big name musicians in the world. But look, she says, for years I asked and pleaded for a chance to own my own work. And we had Prince, obviously, turned his name into a symbol because out of this type of response. So there are not, I mean, even the Beatles, I mean, there are so many stories of artists who lost their rights. And the same thing has happened to writers. There's a really good book called, I think it's called Authors in Hollywood, which is all about some of the things that happen with Hollywood deals and people losing their rights there. So I just wanted to bring it up as, look, as indies, sure, there are things we need to do ourselves and there are lessons we need to learn, but you may well enjoy it a lot more. And it looks to hear that AJ Tracy is very empowered. He has stayed independent. And even though Taylor Swift is more famous, is she any happier? So really interesting, something to consider. Always be questioning what your assumptions are about the people you see. So my personal update this week. Well, of course, much of our time is spent creating new things. But then once we have that new thing, a bit like the intellectual property rights we're talking about, we have to turn that into the finished product. And this week, lots of things have come together for a number of my IP assets. So Map of Plagues is now out on pre-order in the ebook stores. It will come out on the 1st of August. Hopefully by then I'll have the print book done, ebook and print. And then I need to record Map of Shadows and Map of Plagues in audio. And I actually got both the next two covers designed. So there are three books in the series and Map of Plagues is the second one. And I've had all three designed now. So I'm really happy with it. I'm a bit more excited again. I always feel after a project's done, like, oh, I just want to move on to the next thing. But now I'm getting back into this publishing aspect. I'm enjoying it again. So Map of Plagues is with my proofreader, so it's just going through the final typo check, etc. And also with my Pen Friends ARC team, my advanced readers. If you are interested in my Matt Walker fantasies, or you are interested in my ARC team, you can check it out at jfpen.com/penfriends. And of course, Pen Friends with a double N. What else? Yes, to do the audio, I need to hand edit that first. As I've mentioned before, you do need to edit for audio. And we are very lucky, or not lucky, it's one of the benefits of being indie, is that if you edit for audio, you can then update your Kindle version so that WhisperSync still works for your Amazon and Audible books. It will only be minor, but it's enough to potentially throw off WhisperSync, so happy to do that. But I've got to edit it before I record it. But that will be happening. Now I have my little booth here. Successful self-publishing audiobook, which I've recorded in this blanket booth, has been submitted to ACX and Find A Way Voices, so that is on its way. I'll let you know when that's out, but essentially it is coming. Also, How to Write Nonfiction is out of ACX exclusive. So it's been a year, and yes, it is a 7-year term when you sign up for ACX, but you can move your contract to non-exclusive if you own all the rights. So you just, if you are in that situation and you paid for the narration or you've done it yourself, you can email them and say, look, I want to move from non-exclusive to, exclusive to non-exclusive. And then you can use services like Find A Way Voices. So I'm really excited because I want my audiobooks to be available to libraries, to be on Google Play, for the Google Assistant, to be on Scribd, to be on Storytel, and all the other audio platforms that are so exciting. So that's really cool. Also, a second university in America is now using one of my nonfiction books. And again, I want to thank Ingram Spark for making that possible. Just really exciting to have people email and say, one of our professors wants to use your book in the curriculum. And I'm like, yeah, great. You can get it on a discount through your normal catalogue. So that is a very cool thing. And again, I haven't gone looking for these. They have just come to me. So part of that is just having books wide, and that's about wide print. And of course, I went through all of that in the wide episode I did last month or whenever it was. Also, I have made a start on my new multimedia course, Audio for Authors, Podcasting, Audiobooks and Voice Technologies. So, and it turns out, I've just started filling in the material. I've got the structure and I'm starting to fill in the blanks. And there is a lot in my head about this stuff. I think I have been immersed in audio now for probably about 5 years. And I am enjoying getting it out of my head. And it will be a video course first, and then I'll turn that into a book at some point. But I like teaching it first. It helps me figure out what I think. And once I know what I think, then it's much easier to write a book. I find it harder. I mean, I think especially with these things where I want to show you. So, for example, a video course is great for things like audio editing, because I want to show you how I do my edits. I want to for you to listen to some of my mistakes doing audio so that you can get that appreciation. So the video course is appropriate for the first iteration, and then I'll turn that into a book, which won't have the same amount of depth to it, I guess, but hopefully will still be useful. So a lot of you have filled this in, but if you would like to submit your questions and your thoughts for that course, you can go to thecreativepen.com/audioq, AUDIOQ. And if you fill in that questionnaire and then you're interested in the course, I will be sending out a discount code to everyone who fills that questionnaire in, so you can get money off the course when that comes out. So thecreativepen.com/audioq. So thanks as ever for your emails and tweets and also comments this week, because of course the AI episode has a lot of comments on the show notes. Thank you for that. I've been having quite a few conversations with people. Some people have emailed. So really lovely to hear that you're engaged with it. Tara Jade said, thanks so much. This was an awesome episode. It feels like a cheat sheet. You read thousands and thousands of pages and deliver it to us distilled in 1 hour. Thank you. An intriguing topic. We had a great great family discussion afterwards. And that just made me so happy, because that's exactly what I want this type of thing to do. I want you to be able to talk about it with your family, with your friends, with other authors. I feel like that post last week, the AI one, the 9 ways it's going to disrupt, I feel like that's my stake in the ground. This is what I think is happening. And it doesn't mean it will happen, or, you know, that will be the way disruption works. I'm pretty sure there'll be things out of left field we never saw coming. But it's my stake in the ground, and I'm really happy that I was able to put that together. And like I just said about the course, I feel like I almost don't know what I think until I write it down. And you guys help me, because I can deliver. I mean, putting that post together, I wouldn't have done that if I wasn't a podcaster or a blogger. I'm not going to write a book on AI, at least not yet. But for me to write, it was about 7,000-8,000 words, I think, in the end, and then record it for you, it's a finished product of its own accord. And I've said this about podcasting before, but it's part of my body of work, this is. And so I'm thrilled that you guys are along for the ride. C. Reen says, your thoughts on being more human to stand out resonated with thoughts I've had, that the future is bespoke. Creating more custom, unique content rather than something for the mass market. The mass market is where good enough lives. And I like that too. I think that's fantastic. Being bespoke, being custom, being human, that's what we need to be. And then JD Lassica, I wanted to mention this, says, I've been listening to your podcast for years and years. I'm a rarity, a fiction author who's also a Silicon Valley tech geek, which I'm very excited, JD. I felt like when I was at that Wired conference that there were not many people like me there, that I was a creative, a fiction author. I was not a programmer, and I wanted to be immersed in this. JD says, found this episode amazing. The amount of time and care you put into your research makes it the best Creative Pen podcast episode ever. Thanks, JD. And he said, what sets you apart in this space is you identify some of the possible ethical grey areas and the need to flag bad actors, as well as, rather than just celebrating tech advantages without any thought to their practical effects on the industry or on authors' livelihoods. So thank you for that. And I wanted it to be a measured post. As ever, I do on the side of positivity, which I'll come back to in a minute. But yeah, I'm glad you thought it was useful. And then I just wanted to point out Edwin Downward. Hi, Edwin, long time listener to the show, said, getting away from the world of AI after listening to the first of this week's The Creative Pen podcast, sent a lovely picture of a bridge into a wood. And I totally get that too. Like, I want you guys to realize that I don't live in that tech space all the time. I hope you know me well enough by now to know that I very much, you know, a lot of our holidays are walking holidays and that type of thing, and I need nature. And in fact, what happened to me last week is that, and I'm still a bit, my throat's still a bit weird now, but I got sick and I also have been having a lot of headaches. And I think part of it is that I worked so hard on that stuff and got so excited. I got pretty high about all this stuff, really invading my brain with a lot of material. And it's very interesting when you listen to people in the AI space talking about the limitations of the human software almost and our hardware, is that I could not get any more into my brain, the wet stuff. it kind of exploded. And so, yeah, I've been doing a lot more in nature and listening to birdsong. Birdsong is amazing. I just love birdsong. So I'm going back to my other side. And I was thinking about that too. Especially with Map of Plagues and JF Pen and Books and Travel, that's my other side. And this show is my business side, my AI side, my tech side, my left brain, if you want to do that, although we all know that's mythology. But I do feel like we are allowed to have all these different parts to ourselves and bring each of that. But it's very hard to do all of that all at once. So kind of, I was on a bit of a AI tech tack as such. And now I feel drawn back into that other side, that maybe that darker side, the quieter side, natural side. Welcome back, JF Pen. Right. I did want to just point out some of the, I'm not going to read anyone's names or point anyone out, but there were quite a few comments that felt disempowered, that felt worried, felt helpless about some of the things I was talking about. And also that, you know, I hear it from other people around climate change, around the political situation, this feeling of I'm just crushed by everything that's going on. It's all too much. It's all, I'm tiny in the world. I can't do anything. But I wanted to just bring you back to writing again, is that you are the protagonist of your own life. The number one rule about writing a protagonist is that they must act upon the world. So even when things happen to our characters, they must act to get out of the situation. They cannot be passive because that's not a good story. And that's what I feel about us in a situation where so much feels out of control. And it is. Technically, it is out of our control. I mean, I'm, you know, again, the British political situation, like the American one, like many people's, is kind of crazy still after years. But, you know, what can you do about that? Well, you can join organisations. You can work with other people. You can educate yourself as to the real issues. For example, you have to learn more about the things you care about. I think that's what I'm saying, which is why the AI stuff, I would love for more of you and for more of us to be involved in the development of AI. The problem, as they said at the Wired conference, was too many of the people designing the future are just of one type. They are techie and they've been educated in a certain way and they're not necessarily diverse. And so it's really important that people who are not technical get involved in these futures. And the same thing about politics. How many more of us are now political than were not 4 years ago or whatever? But Yuval Noah Harari, who I love his books, I'm actually listening for the third time to Homo Deus at the moment on audiobooks. And he talks about the importance of joining organizations that you care about. So if it's climate change, if it's whatever political thing, if it's AI, if it's whatever it is in your situation, then he said joining an organization is much more powerful. 50 individuals in an organization are much more powerful than 50 individuals acting alone. So similar, the Alliance of Independent Authors, many of you have been upset again about the Amazon stuff, have taken my thoughts on AIs and scammers to say, well, they'll just swamp Amazon. But the point is, liaising with Amazon is not something you can do on your own, but the Alliance of Independent Authors does have a representation with Amazon. So this is the thing, join organizations. You are not alone. Please believe that. But do take action on your own life. Be your own protagonist. So today's show is sponsored by DraftDigital.com, and I'll play a word from the lovely Kevin Tomlinson in a minute. So as ever, I just wanted to say that I personally use DraftDigital to publish to Nook, as well as a number of other ebook platforms, and the guys are always working to help authors. So if you're at a publishing or an author conference and you see DraftDigital, you might see Dan or Kevin, or Mark now is going to a lot of things. Chris and the guys, but go and say hi to them. They are super approachable, super helpful, and very upbeat, lovely people, and always happy to help with your questions. There are no silly questions with the lovely DraftDigital team. So keep that in mind. They've also started to do some Ask Us Anything type situations. So that's really useful too. So this type of corporate sponsorship pays for the hosting, transcription and editing. But my time in creating the show is sponsored by my wonderful patrons. Thanks to everyone supporting the show on Patreon. You guys enable me to do the bigger shows like the AI one there. Thanks to new patrons, Lisa Forett, Dixon Riul, and Jessica Samuels. I really do appreciate your support on Patreon. It demonstrates you enjoy the show, find it useful, and want it to continue. And of course, you can support the show with just a couple of dollars a month, and you'll get the extra monthly Q&A audio, which will be going out probably next week, actually, a bit early. So yeah, you can support the show at patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. Right, here's a word from Kevin, and then we'll get on with the interview.
Hi, this is Kevin Tomlinson with Draft to Digital, bringing you D2D Smart Author Tip number 4. Okay, let's just put this right out there. Discoverability. That's like the holy grail for indie authors, because it means driving readers to your books. And we know exactly how important that is and how difficult it can be. That's why we created D2D Author Pages and D2D Book Tabs. Author Pages are your author home away from home page online, giving readers one place to find your books listed by series, as well as an author bio, author photo, and links to your important social media sites. You can also link to any existing website you have, and here's the kicker, you can include a link for readers to sign up for your newsletter through any service you prefer. That's a major discoverability mojo right there. Sleek, cool, and ready to drive readers to your books everywhere they're sold online. That is discoverability. And if you'd like to reach the widest possible audience, be sure to use Draft Digital's free ebook distribution to major online retailers worldwide, including Apple iBooks, Kobo, Tolino, and more. Start reaching a bigger audience now. Convert your manuscript, distribute it online, and get the support you need the whole way at draftedigital.com/pen.
Today, I'm here with Andre Chafferon. Hi, Andre.
Hey.
Welcome to the show. Just a little introduction. Andre is an entrepreneur, writer, marketer, and co-founder of Tiny Little Businesses, which offers online courses for creative business and marketing. So, Andre, tell us a bit more about you and how you got into writing.
It started way back in 2003 when I lost my job, and I was thrown into this world of the internet, and I figured out early on that video and audio was out of the question, being a super introvert / shy person, kind of like what we're doing now. Other than that, I just early on it became very clear that writing was something that I needed to get good at. Also, I have a weird accent, being from South Africa. So, there isn't that barrier, that accent barrier when you're writing words, right? In fact, the very first time I did an interview years ago, people thought, I thought you were American, because I'm always writing in American.
That's really funny, because I get the same thing. If you write with American spelling, people just assume exactly. You're American, right? But I want to come back to the, because in your bios and everything, you say you're dyslexic. So how does someone who is, I guess, diagnosed or labeled as dyslexic manage to overcome that to get into writing?
I think it must have been shyness and introvertness that overpowered dyslexia, I think mainly the dyslexia was I can't spell and I read slowly, so other than those constraints is like, okay, the big deal, so I read a bit slower. And spelling, well, you don't really need to know how to spell when you're on the internet, because you've got spell checks, right? So it hasn't been that bad. And over the years, I've certainly got better at writing. So the spelling's getting better, but it doesn't need to be perfect it doesn't need to be perfect.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. So it's really interesting that you came into the internet. So you said 2003 there. What was your previous job?
Yeah, I used to be a computer guy. That's kind of like I label it. I was a Microsoft certified system engineer. So I was working at companies in London at the time, just doing computer stuff, really. I fell out of love with it. I stopped enjoying it. And that was kind of the signal that, hey, Andre, you need to figure out what to do. So there was a midlife crisis back then. It's like, well, I can either look for another job in the same industry or figure out something else to do. And I had no idea that you could earn a living online. That was completely new to me and foreign. I knew that I was going to lose my job at the end of 2003, because Our company had been acquired by a bigger monster, so we knew that the computer department was probably going to be replaced by the other ones. So everybody started looking for new jobs, and I was the only one that said, you know, let's figure out something else. So,
yeah, well, really interesting, especially back then. But then as a system, it's interesting. I didn't know you were a systems engineer, but I can kind of tell from going through your courses and your material, because you do figure things out in words and with diagrams. You're really good at diagrams and kind of working things out that way. So I want to talk about you have this great course, Sphere of Influence, which I completely love because it's how I've done my business model. And it's all about attracting people to you. And you're, as you said, you're introvert, you're shy, you're not about the hard sell, you're not out there all the time doing webinars and this, that, and the other, or speaking, or you're just, you know, you stay pretty quiet and private. So let's talk about Sphere of Influence. What are some of the ways that authors can draw readers to them?
I think, so the first thing to understand is there's some big ideas. And one of the big ideas is that, you want to be very crystal clear on who your market is. And it's typically narrower than you think it is. You know, most people default to, I want to talk to everybody. You know, everybody is my market. Everybody's going to read my books or buy my courses. And that's not the case. So as soon as you come to terms with the fact that, you know, my audience is only a tiny little thing, it's small, and therefore, I'm going to talk to just them and ignore everybody else. And as soon as you make that a mental shift, what you say and what you do becomes very polarizing. And polarizing automatically attracts certain people and it pushes other people away. And that's the whole big idea around this in terms of a concept, if you want to like just map it out in your brain. So when you say something or do something that has somebody's posture like leaning in because they want to hear more or just, you know, learn more about this thing, and the words or the story or the video or the audio, you know, this isn't just about text. It's about creating an environment that when somebody's reading that message, they're leaning in because they want to hear more, as opposed to it just being very wishy-washy, you know, kind of general, and it's just nah. And so you get them, you know, not necessarily, you know, leaning in. So one of the ideas is resonance and dissonance. So as soon as somebody reads something or hears a message or, you know, just they're exposed to something that causes internal dissonance in them, they automatically kind of like back away. And that typically happens all the time. So from seeing an ad to landing on a landing page, at every single little point, you know, every single touch point, there's always this dissonance and resonance that's playing out. Either something's resonating or it's not, right? So by creating these environments that pull people forward and have them leaning in all the time as opposed to moving backwards. But at the same time, is because you have a very clear idea of who your audience is, both sides are always at play. There needs to be resonance for the right people, so they're leaning in, and there needs to be dissonance for everybody else and have them, you know, moving away, because ultimately the goal is to, you know, build an email list, for example, which is an asset that you own. And you want as many people on that email list to want to be there because there's something that they feel that you've got to say that's valuable to them. You know, whether it's a course or it's books or it's an author or it's, you know, anything really. So that's the big idea, I guess. And then there's just little things you can do.
What's your favorite? I mean, there's the idea, but then there's kind of the tactics. So for example, this podcast is one of my, I guess, tactics to attract people. And if people feel dissonance, they're going to stop listening.
Exactly.
So that's one way. So what's your favorite way?
So one of the things I like to do, and which is kind of like the way that I build out all of my web pages and my sites. So if anybody goes and visits our site, they'll soon figure out that it's kind of like an experience. They'll click around. It's not I mean, there's parts of it that's very linear. So there's a little journey that they go down, but at some point it's going to open up and they're going to make decisions. You know, they can go here or they can go there or they can find something. Many times I'll create content that I don't make it obvious for people to find. And the benefit is it turns into like Easter eggs, because when they find them and they think that's just like a surprise, they just found this thing and it's amazing. It's like, and they're wondering, why didn't you put this, you know, so it's obvious. And then they'll email you. So then you know that it's working. So by setting up marketing funnels in such a way, it really does a great job of pulling different types of people forward. So it's not just one size fits all. Here's my funnel. It's four pages or whatever, and that's it. There's stuff all around there that's all interlinked and connected up, and people mostly will follow that narrative, but sometimes they'll come in from different entry points, or they'll just click around and they'll click your about page and read that, and that'll lead somewhere else. And next thing you know, they're reading some internal page that they just happened upon, although it was on purpose, but they didn't, you know, for them, they've found something amazing. Mm. And all these different things have, you know, create that sense of them leaning in, and it's like, this is different. This is something that they want more of. But it's all engineered in that way, you know, engineered in a good way, not engineered in a sleazy way.
Yeah. Well, as you're talking there, because I find this very easy for nonfiction. It's really easy to do in the niche I'm in, or in, you know, it's easy to do. But fiction is a lot harder. Because especially like someone like me, I know you read like Jack Reacher. I know you like Reacher books. Very clear what that is. But someone like me, I write all over the shop and I write different genres. But you've just kind of made me think, if I have more of a landing page that enables different, you know, people to click different things, if they're interested in different things that intersect with my fiction, that might lead them through a journey to find the right book. Is that kind of what you're talking about?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's something called hypertext narrative, and hypertext narrative is much like HTML pages. You know, what the whole internet is built on. It's a web page and these links, and the links go here or go there, right? Mm. So it's just different pages all linked up. That's all it is. So it's just using that same experience. You know, and when you're reading a book, well, you read page one and then you flip to page two. Well, that's really like a link. I know you use your finger or you'll turn the page if it's a physical book, but it's going from page one to page two. And there's a mechanism that says, you know, two comes next and three comes after that. So on the internet and the pages that you build, you have the same dynamic at play, but it's even better because then you can ask questions by essentially having a choose your own adventure. You know, if you're into this or that, you know, raise your hand and click the thing that's most relevant for you. It just works so well because people don't feel pressurized. You know, at no point do they feel pressurized. It's just a big choose your own adventure game, thing. And they get to pick the thing that stands out, whether it's an image or some, you know, or some headline or some copy or some story that then leads them somewhere. And they click and make a choice. And then obviously on the back end of that, you, with your technology, you can be tracking things. You know, you can figure out that, this person's going down my author book three funnel, whatever. And then you know that at the end of that, there's going to be something of value for them to allow them to go to the next level. Mm. So the next level would be exchanging their email address for something else. And that next level would then be taking that conversation, you know, to email list, and then there can be more cool stuff happening there. So you can have all these different levels, but I think one of the mistakes I see many people make is that first level, that like level zero, which is on your website, or that first touch point. Theirs is very short. It's like literally there's an opt-in form. There's just a few bullet points, get my lead magnet, and then it's kind of like it's a first date that's gone all wrong. I think, you know, that level zero needs to be big and wide, and you need to allow people the freedom to move around and to pull themselves forward.
Oh, you've given me so much work to do. Something I think, because I've been reading your stuff for years, but you've had to really just help something click for me, which for my fiction site, that's exactly right. It needs to be a much bigger way in rather than just, here's my free book, you know, and then maybe you don't like that particular free book. I mean, maybe there's another way I could have talked to you. So that's really interesting. But I know I can hear my audience. Everyone's going, yeah, great. So we can work on that level zero on our website. But how do we get people to our websites? Because most authors are focusing on the book. And then, you know, they might start an email list with a link from the back of the book. You know, you enjoyed the book, sign up for my list. Generally, most authors are not directing traffic to their website. They're focusing on sending traffic to Amazon or, you know, other book retailers, Kobo, that type of thing. So what do you like in terms of traffic generation, getting people to that level zero?
I think many people don't quite realize the value in this, in the certain segments of people. You know, there's certain customers, well, we'll call them customers, because ultimately your best super fan is a customer that's made more than one purchase, right? So those people, that's like the 80-20. So when you really focus on creating an environment around serving those people, and not quite ignoring everybody else, but I just see so many people chasing that like 20%, but they're spending 80% of the energy trying to track down all these new leads and doing all these things. And I'm not saying that's wrong, because obviously you need to be able to attract people into your business. But there's so many wins that you can do that will create so much leverage that once that's all working right, then you can go and spend time mincing about with the 20% that's going to require 80% of your time and effort. So I think, you know, one idea would be that if something is really amazing, like if your book is really amazing and your characters are really amazing, the people, your best readers, are always going to tell their friends about it. It's just it's something that's going to happen. But you can't engineer that other than just creating the best version of your product. And then obviously you can engineer it in the sense that in your back matter, you can have links that point back to certain places on your, let's call it your level zero on your website, where they get to then browse around, because now this is a person that's been told that they should check out this book, and they have, and they've gone through it and they've really enjoyed it. And then they've clicked the link to go to the website. And now this is like a whole new world for them, and giving them that ability to browse around a bit and, you know, just to get to know, you know, you as an author and the different stuff you've got. I think that's really powerful. And if you just get that part dialed in and creating like a magnet. So if you think about your website and your books and your assets as a magnet, and if you really, and if you make those things as strong as you possibly can, things are going to get attracted to it. They just will, you know, people share, they talk, they do all these things that bring people in. I mean, we get tons of traffic that I've got no idea where it comes from, but you know, it just rocks up, right? And then once you've got all that stuff working, then you can go around and try and fiddle with your Facebook ads and do all the other little things, right? But I think just focusing on those things, which is a moving target all the time, and ignoring all the other things that are very high leverage that I think are more powerful. That's one way anyway.
Yeah, and I really like your focus on building that asset that you own, like your website, and that's what I've done as well with the creative pen, and I want to do that for my fiction. It's something I really want to crack for fiction. But I'm interested there. You said their traffic just rocks up, and I know how that feels as well. But I think that is about time. So you started in 2003 online, and I started 2008, so a little behind you. But how? I mean, I'd love to hear your perspective on patience and time in the market, because sometimes, like, some people come to your website because they've just heard of you through word of mouth, as you say, like I did. I heard of you. I don't even know how I heard of you, whatever it was, number of years ago. And I couldn't point to how that happened. But it is, How important is that time and consistency?
You know, it's a choice early on. And I think that the sooner somebody can come to terms that with the fact that they're in business for the long term, as opposed to it being a short-term play, right? So, you know, I think most writers don't become writers because they think they're going to make a bestseller and make millions overnight, right? It's a long game. So if you approach all the stuff that you do with that same mindset, then it frees you up to just work on it. And yes, that little curve, you know, that hockey stick starts off really, really flat and shallow, and it stays like that for a while. And there's, you know, there's no getting around that. I mean, you can do all the things that you do. You can wake up each morning and you can do your writing and you can create your content and create all the little things that point people in. And ultimately, you need to write the books that are the best version you possibly can. And that's the like level zero stuff that you just got to do. And it takes time. And then you can just layer on all these other little bits along the way. But I think spending so much energy early on things that are difficult and are moving targets and can be frustrating. Sometimes it's just challenging, right? So
yeah, it's totally. And I mean, again, on that time thing, so I'm interested in your perspective on what has changed with internet business and what has stayed the same.
I think lots of changes and lots of stay the same. I guess it's not something that I really focus too much attention, only because you know, there's something called, you know, there's this theory called systems thinking, right? And systems thinking is saying that, you know, your business is a system, and, you know, life is a system, your body is a system. And by just having, you know, that system can't be controlled by just having, you know, tweaking one or two inputs. It's a thing that's all, that each thing affects the next few parts, the next thing. And so it's a big thing, right? So if you understand that, then it makes life a bit easier to understand that it does go a bit slower. Facebook ads isn't going to be the like savior. It's just one component. And then, you know, you got to send them somewhere, and then you got your website and things happen over there. So, you know, things change all the time. There's randomness and there's luck, and those are factors as well. You know, if I just start from scratch right now today and delete everything else, maybe it'll take longer, maybe it'll take quicker because I know more, but I don't have the answer to that. I just know that I've got to rock up each day and do my shit, and over time it'll work out, right?
I love that. And I kind of feel the same way. Like I don't measure most things, which I know is a bad. I guess the thing I measure is my effort, my time in doing things, and I measure money, but I don't sure. measure like I don't measure even downloads very often on the podcast. I measure book sales once a year. I mean, it's kind of crazy.
But
I'm like you. I'm like, as long as it's trending in the direction that feels right and is I'm happy with, then all's good, right?
Yeah, totally. I mean, we haven't even got Google Analytics installed on our websites. We should just keep it lean, less distractions, the better. You know, having Google Analytics, for example, isn't going to make more people show up at your website. That's just a mirror. It's just like sometimes it's a vanity metrics for the most part. You know, it's not going to change anything. So,
yeah, no, that's fantastic. So I want to ask you have this fantastic example of Frank and Matt, who are these two different characters that really represent the difference. And that long-term thinking is definitely one of the differences. And so I wonder if you could just kind of outline Frank and Matt and the difference and the mindset shift that you need to become, you know, to do this for the long term.
Yeah, Frank and Matt was an experiment that I did many years ago. And, you know, ultimately, you know, people hire coaches because coaches can read the label that's on the outside of the bottle, so to speak. You know, when you as a creator are in the bottle, it's difficult to see things, right? So we hire coaches. And, you know, people, you know, all of us have blind spots. And for the most part, we don't get to see the, you know, we don't see our icky parts or the things that are necessarily negative per se, right? So Frank and Matt was basically creating two characters. Frank is the character that people are, and the reason why that they stuck on this, where they're not really going anywhere. They hop from opportunity to opportunity, from thing to thing. So basically, and then Matt is the ideal person. It's the person that they want to be. It's the writer, it's the entrepreneur, it's the guy that's doing his work and earning a nice living. So I just attached those results to those characters so they could identify with. So Frank, as they were reading Frank, when I first put it out there, they're nodding their heads. And then somewhere on that page, then the penny drops. It's like, oh shit, I'm Frank. And they have that realization. And it's like a slap in the face, but it's, you know, it's not a negative thing. It's more like, oh my God, I'm so glad someone's told me this, because I didn't quite see it this way. It's the whole idea is I can't read the label on the bottle, and I'm glad that this person has, or I've now been able to see that this is why I'm like this. And it's that aha moment that they get, and it just changes everything for them. And now they read now, and it's like everything's, all the lights are going off and the sirens are ringing, and they're reading now, and then it's the Matt guy, and it's like, yes, that's who I want to be. And then ultimately at the end, the whole idea is, if you want to move from a Frank to a Matt, and I'm using language now, move from Frank to Matt, because they've already associated themselves as Frank. So now I'm essentially talking to them personally, but you know, just by saying Frank. And as soon as you want to become the Matt, and Matt is associated with our product, our course, our whatever at the time, it just was like, well, it's the simplest thing ever. It's like, I want to become a Matt. They've really made that mental shift. So them making that purchase back then was just easy, game over. It's just they all hopped along and went into that training course. So I've used that concept, and that Frank versus Matt, I've actually kept that original letter intact, so people can still read it today.
And then I see it as a great and I'll there's a blog post on it, so I'll link to that in the show notes. But it definitely is, and I feel like all the authors listening have the same journey, and you go from that kind of short-term thinking and, like, you know, just chucking stuff out in the world and jumping on the next marketing tip, and to this more entrepreneurial longer-term mindset. And maybe it just takes time. I mean, maybe it just, you have to be at that place when you're ready for it. I don't know.
Everybody has to go on the journey from their version of Frank to Matt. And it can be called, you can call it different names. I think when you read the Frank versus Matt thing, it's a framework that anybody can take and map their own story onto that, right? So you can call them whatever you want to call them, but ultimately it's the hero's journey, going from where they are here to where they want to be. And you as the person are helping them bridge that gap, right? You creating that bridge to get them from there to there. Mm. So although they've still got to make that journey, you're the one that's given them a map and told them that, you know, it's going to be hard, and, you know, here's the secret sword, and it's going to get hard, and there's a certain place you're going to use the sword. I don't know if you're a Game of Thrones fan, but, oh, yeah. You know, it was a pivotal part. I don't want to spoil this for anybody that hasn't watched it, but there was a knife, and it was a certain part with the Frozen King guy. And, you know, so us as creators give people these magic weapons, and which is our courses, our products, whatever, and it helps people get to where they need to get to, and they understand that. They understand that. That journey needs to be traveled by them. You know, somebody else is not going to travel that journey for them. But you helping them make that journey easier.
Yeah, and that, I guess that's what we both do. We both share our journeys in order to help other people on their journeys. That's, you know, I think that's the basics of nonfiction, but also fiction, because you're telling a story in the hope that it will help someone else go through their own story. And I mean, I have not written a novel yet, I think, but you use the power of story in everything. So how can authors use that power of story, say, in their email marketing? Because you have a very famous course, Autoresponder Madness, which is about email marketing. So any sort, I know it's such a huge topic, but using story in email, like, what would be the number one tip?
I think so. So a very good, a big tip is that email is your asset, right? It's this thing that you own. It's built on a protocol that's not owned by anybody. That's baked in and part of the actual internet. So it's part of the protocols that power our internet, right? So Facebook doesn't own it. The government doesn't own it. So email can never be taken away from us, and it's an asset that we have. So the big mistake is, I see that most people don't nurture that asset. They either don't build an email list, or if they do, it's very random, and they'll just get names onto a list and then never email them unless there's something going on. And Russell Blake, who's an author that I love to read, but he's like the worst email marketer in the world. I know he's got that celebrity status, and he's got lots of books out there. Maybe he feels that his bonding and his relationship is in his book, so he doesn't have to do the stuff on the email, which is, you know, I think he's missing a trick, because it's basically, you'll receive just this random email saying, hey, jet number 11 is out, you know, click here to go buy it. There's no anticipation. There's no, this book's coming out. So you're using this as an opportunity to create some excitement about a book that you know that your audience is really into, because they've read the first 10 in the series. Why wouldn't you build it up a bit? So I think, you know, understanding that your email list is an asset and it needs nurturing, just like your rose bush. If you don't water it, it's going to die, and you've just lost out on probably the most powerful asset you can have. You know, when you've got your 1,000 true fans, and then over time, when you've got your 10,000 true fans, that's the most powerful asset in the world. Because if you treat it right, it'll treat you right, and you can sell tons of books every single time. You know, it's just like clicking a button, writing a few emails, and it's like a ATM machine without it sounding too spammy.
You are the king of emails, so I would, and part of that comes from your introversion, which I think is amazing. It's kind of using something that is, and I mean, I'm an introvert too, but I'm not as good at emails as you are, but it's using that gift in a different way. So I highly encourage people to sign up for some of your email lists, just to look over your shoulder.
And writers have no excuse. I mean, you know, there's marketers that buy my stuff, and I get it. So they can't write, or they need to learn how to write. They've got an excuse, but writers don't have an excuse. They've got the whole writing part down, right? It's the technology part that maybe scares them. It's what do I say? I'm scared of selling my stuff. But people are there because they want to hear about the books, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And then we're almost out of time, but you run a company with your lovely wife, Anita, called Tiny Little Businesses, which I love, because it's what I have. It's what most authors have. And you also have this great course on lean business for creators. So you and I and Anita, and you know, we've chosen to run businesses, but not to grow massive businesses, like not to build out loads of employees and just, you know, grow like that, but we still love to grow our revenue, right? I mean, we enjoy money. So what are your tips for scaling revenue, but not growing the size of the company?
So again, it goes back to like a principles mindset and just understanding where you choose to play, right? So, you know, choosing small is a mindset that has consequences. And if you go the other way, going big, going growth, going scaling at all costs also has consequences, right? So one example I like to give is 37 Signals, which is Basecamp. That's a fairly big company. You know, tiny doesn't mean earning $10,000 a year. You can earn like 37 signals. They earn multiple millions a year recurring revenue, but they've chosen to be small. They've chosen not to take funding. They've chosen to do not to do the things that many other people would do. So for them, you know, that works. And then it comes through with their products. So I think for us, choosing to be small, choosing not to have, you know, 10 staff, which then there's payroll, and then payroll requires certain decisions to make. And now you've got to do launches every single month because it's just that hamster wheel needs to turn. So I think as soon as your mindset is thinking in a certain way, it frees you up to be able to just, you know, create and do the best possible job you possibly can. That then it's like a snowball, because then you can create the best work you can do, and as a result of that, other things happen, right? So yeah, and you know, you don't need to do the big things that people that other companies have to do to bring in revenue. You know, for us, we don't have to drive paid traffic to our sites. It's something that we'll get to when we get to it, right? But we don't have to do it. Whereas other people, you know, $50,000 a month isn't enough to even cover staff. So they've got to go out there and seeking out other ways to bring in business. So they've got to go and do deals all day long. And it's hard, right? So I think if you understand that you want to play at a certain size, and that size can get bigger over time, but just be okay with the fact that, maybe 10,000 a month, is great, and I can now leave my job and then just continue to do what you did to get from zero to 10,000 a month, and then you'll eventually get more and more. But for us, it's just been a decision to stay small. We've gone the other way, and it wasn't so nice. We just didn't enjoy it anymore. Mm. Stopped enjoying what we did. So I think that's a good signal, is if you stop enjoying parts of what we do, then that's not a good thing.
Yeah, totally. And again, personality type, you know, again, the same as you. I don't want to spend my time managing people. I don't want to talk to people apart from you occasionally on my podcast. I'm pretty much podcasting is how I talk to people. And, other than that, I don't particularly want to interact with employees or whatever. So, you know, that management of other people is something that has to happen the bigger you get. You guys have virtual assistants, don't you, though? You don't do everything yourself. So you've got a balance between outsourcing and the things you love.
Yeah, totally. We tried the whole hiring full-time staff, and although it's a great model, it's just for us, it just didn't feel right. It just didn't, you know, it wasn't what we wanted. So for us, it's Nitra and me, which are the two co-founders, and then we have a person that runs our support desk. And then outside of that, if we need stuff done, we'll then just outsource it out. So, tech stuff or whatever. But I just, you know, most of the things that I do, everything that I do is what I enjoy, which is all the writing part, including all the weird images. So I'll hand draw all my graphics. So I don't have to outsource graphic work. I do it all myself because I enjoy it. So I think, yeah, so long as you're enjoying what you're doing, you should do it. And if there's stuff that you don't like doing, just farm it out.
You're very good then. I thought you had another artist doing all of that. Your graphics are amazing. You should do a graphic nonfiction book of your work. Have you thought about that? Because those are big now.
Yeah, I've... most of our products now, there's a lot of hand-drawn stuff inside of it, like Lean Business for Creators. All of the images inside there are just my hand-drawn doodles, but people really love them. So I used to start off with the hand-drawn doodles, and then once I'd released that, like version one, I would then go back and then make everything look nicer. I would then stick it into Sketch app and then redraw everything as vectors. But it's like, no, we like it messy. They kind of just resonate with that. So I think, yeah, it just goes to show that you don't have to, you know, anybody can draw doodles, right?
Oh, no, some of your stuff's really good. So, and that systems thinking, I think that's what very much makes it easier to understand some of your concepts. It, you know, doing pictures really works. So, yeah, and it's interesting, nonfiction, I've seen whole, you know, in bookstores now, there'll be a whole section of graphic nonfiction books. So there's a little idea for you.
In fact, I've got, here's one over here. It's the Theory of Constraints, and the whole Theory of Constraints book is comic.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And that's a business book.
Yes.
This is a business book.
It's so fascinating that it's going that way, but I think people do love visuals. So anyway, that was off topic, but I just was amazed that you do all that yourself. But
I'm a very visual person, you know, so lists aren't my best friend. So I do mind maps. So everything's very visual, very mind mappy. And then I just write. So that's my thing. And it's become part of my superpower, if you will, is that. So it's just lean into your strengths, I guess.
Yeah, lean into your strengths. That's a good way for us to finish. So where can people find you and everything you do online?
All of our stuff now has been moved from different siloed sites to Tiny Little Businesses. So if anybody goes to Tiny Little Businesses, the plural .com, they'll find all of our stuff there, or just type in Andre Chaperon into Google and you'll find it that way. That's it really. Everything's there.
Fantastic.
Most of it's written.
Yeah, and that's what's so brilliant about it. So thank you so much for your time, Andre. That was great.
So I hope you enjoyed the interview with Andre today, and it's given you some ideas for your author business. So next week, I'm talking about managing a diverse creative career with Tim Chismar, who, like me, is doing lots of different things. And together, he has put a sort of creative portfolio career in place, a very different model to the focused Andre Chaperon. And this is what I love about the indie space. I feel like we are a very broad church. There are no rules. And the main aim is putting together a business that makes you creatively happy and gives you enough money to do what you want with your life. So happy writing, and I'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes and show notes available at thecreativepen.com/podcast. You can also get your free author blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at The Creative Pen or find me on Facebook at The Creative Pen. See you next time.